Nehemiah chapter 6. As I said, I want to consider the first four verses. Verse 2 really sums up what I wish to consider today. Verse number 2, we read, Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. Marathoner loses by a mustache. Marathoner loses by a mustache. So read the headline of a recent press story item commenting upon the Brussels Marathon in Belgium. Abe's Tehiamai, it appeared, was an easy winner of the marathon until someone questioned where his mustache had disappeared off to. You see, he started the race with the mustache, but whenever he reached the finishing line, suddenly his mustache had disappeared. There was a question after question, interrogation after interrogation. What had actually happened? Where did his mustache go? And whenever eyewitness accounts were checked, it became evident that the person who started the race and the person who finished the race were two entirely different people. The person who started the race with the mustache was Abe's coach. And what actually happened was that 7 miles into the race, he disappeared off into the woods with his number 62. He then gave that number to Abe's Tehiamai, and then he ran the rest of the race. One eyewitness account stated, they looked just about the same, only one had a mustache. And sadly, deception is a normal part of society today. And however, deception, where does it start? Well, it all starts with the great deceiver himself. You remember in Genesis chapter 3, just after the dawn of creation, what did Satan do? Satan, he comes, he appears to the first man and woman, Adam and Eve, and he deceived Eve. He was the great deceiver. And ever since Genesis chapter 3, Satan has been about the business of deception. Just as he starts the Bible off as a deceiver, so in Revelation chapter 20, we read in that verse 3 that Satan is now in the bottomless pit. Why? That he should deceive the nations no longer. And here in Nehemiah chapter 6, the deception of Satan is displayed in a most crafty and cunning manner. The Jews were nearing the completion of the rebuilding project. And here we find in this chapter, Nehemiah chapter 6, there are different last-ditch efforts to stop the rebuilding work on the walls. Chapter 4 was the last place where we saw the enemy come together and rise up and seek to hinder the work. And now in this chapter, you have some last-ditch efforts to attempt to stop the wall. You see, as Nehemiah had began this work of rebuilding the walls, as we have viewed these last Sunday mornings, Nehemiah did face problems. He faced problems internally. He faced persecution externally. But despite all of this, the work had continued to progress. Verse 1 tells us the stage that the work is now in. And there we read there that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at the time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. So now we find the walls were now completed. And there was some minor touching up details before this project was finished. He stated that he hadn't set up the doors upon the gates. And remember that chapter 3, that long list of names, that long list of workers, it is a summary of what actually happens in chapter 4 through to chapter 6. And now Nehemiah, looking around Jerusalem, he had finished the walls. But he just had to put the doors upon the gates. And just here, as he's about to put the finishing touches on the walls, the enemy, they try a different tactic. They had already tried vocal opposition. They had already tried physical persecution. But now they try the tactic of friendly deception. Here in this chapter, they now attempt to become the friend of Nehemiah. After being his foe, they come alongside him very sneakily, very craftily, and they attempt to become his friend, and they attempt to draw him away to the village of Ono, and there to have a conversation with him. And here we find the enemy. They attempted to befriend Nehemiah in order to deceive Nehemiah. And when the enemy has not succeeded as your foe, he will then become your friend. The enemy will try and befriend you in order to beguile you. Oh, Satan, he has many, many different devices, many, many different ways to try and trick, to try and trap you as a saint of God. He is the deceiver. And sometimes he'll try opposition, sometimes he'll try persecution, but other times he'll try deception. He will lull you, as it were, into a false sense of security to then try and deceive you. Oh, don't be ignorant of Satan's devices. Don't be ignorant of the tricks, the traps that Satan sets. Oh, Satan, he'll try whatever he can. He has many weapons in his armory to try and trip you up on your walk with God. And this is exactly what happened here in this chapter. Nehemiah, he's dusted down previous attacks, and he keeps going. He's continuing on with the walls. He's now seen the walls completed. But the enemy tried a different tactic. A different tactic. They tried deception. Deception. And that's what I want to consider this morning. An invitation filled with deception. An invitation filled with deception. I want you to notice firstly here the reception of the invitation. The reception of the invitation. Here in verse 2, the enemy come to Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, he receives this seemingly harmless invitation. However, we find their intentions, they were anything but. And here they were attempting to deceive Nehemiah to get him down off the walls. Thinking here about the reception of the invitation, notice its place. Where did Nehemiah receive the invitation to go to? Well, in verse 2 we read, Sanballat and Geshem said unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. As Nehemiah had now viewed the walls being completed, Sanballat and Geshem, they were also watching as well. They had watched the walls now coming together nicely. And so they tried another tactic to get Nehemiah from off the walls. They snuck alongside him. And they said, come, let's have a conversation, a conference, as it were, in the village of Ono. And now this place, Ono, it was some 25 or 35 miles away from Jerusalem. It was near a place called Lydda, which was on the border of Philistia, where the Philistines resided. Now, this is very, very interesting. It's interesting because they didn't just want to talk to Nehemiah in his own territory, so to speak. They could have quite easily spoke with him as he was on the walls, or perhaps in a place in Jerusalem. But no. They wanted him to come to Ono. Why was it they wanted him to come to a little place 25 miles away from Jerusalem? To get him on his own. To get him on his own. They wanted him away from his friends. They wanted him away from his fellow laborers, away from his help, away from his support, because they realized that it would be far easier to trap Nehemiah if he was on his own. And whenever you stay away, then you are easy prey. Satan will often attack you by attempting to get you on your own. Often this is the device of the devil. Sometimes he'll try and draw you away. He'll try and draw you away from church. Try and draw you away from the normal meetings of the church. Away from your friends. Away from your spiritual family. Why does he do that? Because he knows you're far more weaker in your own. He knows that you're far more easier prey when you're away from your support. There are some today who say, I don't need church. I'll just worship on my own. But that couldn't be further from the truth. The Bible has given the local church for your mutual support and your mutual strengthening. And so sometimes one of the tactics that Satan does is he seeks, like Sanballat, like Geshem, He tries to draw you away, to get you on your own, so then he will be far easier to attack. You think about it. That incident that I mentioned in the introduction, whenever Satan came and tempted Eve. It's interesting when he came and tempted her. He came and tempted her whenever Eve was away from the company of her husband. Whenever she was away from the help, the guidance of the head of the home. That's whenever Satan came. Satan slithered into the Garden of Eden and Satan tempted Eve. Again, you think of David. That terrible incident in 2 Samuel chapter 11. There, whenever he sinned with Bathsheba. When was it that David was tempted? Well, we read in 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 1. At the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon, besieged Rabbah. But listen to these words. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. David, he should have been out in battle. He should have been fighting. He should have been warring with his soldiers. But he stayed at home. He tarried in Jerusalem. And that's when Satan came and tempted him with Bathsheba. You see, whenever you're isolated, you then become unprotected. Whenever you're on your own, you're far more easier prey for Satan. Like Nehemiah, Satan wants to bring you to Ono. He wants to bring you to that place where you're all alone. He wants to bring you to that place where you're alone when you're on your own, because then you're far more open to his attack. I say to you this morning, I say to you when you're tempted to stay away, when you're tempted to leave the meetings, when you're tempted not to come, don't listen to the lie of Satan. Because Satan, he just wants you to stay away so that he can attack you far easier. You think of when the lions attack their prey. You ever watch them, even on some of those shows in television? How do lions attack their prey? Well, they see maybe a herd of gazelles or antelopes, giraffes, whatever the animal might be. They see them all together. What does the lion do? The lion just runs into the middle of the group, and then he scatters the group. And then he isolates the weakest one of the group, and then he devours them for dinner. And this is exactly what Satan does. He tries to come, as it were, into the middle of the group, into the middle of the pack, to scatter the pack, and then to isolate the weak ones, as it were, and then to seek to have them for dinner. Oh, be wary. Be wary when you're tempted to go to Ono. I'd be very, very wary. When you're tempted to go on it, as it were, on it alone. Because Satan wants you there. He wants you on your own. He knows that's when you're far easier prey for him. It's place. But notice also here, thinking about the reception of the invitation, notice its purpose. Verse 2 we read, Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. The phrase, a meet together, it seems a very innocent one. In the Hebrew, it suggests a friendly visit. And what was the purpose that Sanballat and Geshem came to Nehemiah? Well, they came to him in order to have, as they called it, a friendly visit. They wanted Nehemiah to think that he was their friends. In effect, they were trying to show him that they had changed, that they had turned over a new leaf. Nehemiah would have known fine well that maybe just a couple of weeks ago, these same people, they were slandering the work. You remember how in chapter 4, they laughed at the work that he was doing. They said that even if a fox walked up into the middle of the wall, then the wall would completely fall. Then we saw in that chapter as well how they physically persecuted the children of God. And now, just a few weeks later probably, they're coming to Nehemiah. They want to talk with him. They want to meet together. You see, they realized that if they tried this different tactic, the tactic of deception, the tactic of just being, as it were, his friend, attempting to be his friend, then they would stop the work. Because they realized that if they got Nehemiah off the walls, then the work would stop. Nehemiah alludes to this in verse 3. But they realized then that if they could get him off the wall, then the work would stop being completed. And so Nehemiah states their purpose here. Their desire was to do me mischief. And whilst the devil is an accuser, he is also an angel of light. Sometimes he changes masks to suit the situation. The devil will do this. I say to you, the devil this morning, he has many different face masks that he puts on. Sometimes he puts on the face mask of vehement opposition. But then there are other times when he puts on the face mask of deception. He wants to do this. He wants to draw you away, to ensnare you, to entrap you, to endanger you, because in doing this, he wants to do you mischief. Remember, Satan hates Christ. Satan hates everything to do with Christ. And so because you are one of his people, Christ's people, Satan, he hates you. Satan doesn't like you. Satan, he may attempt to be your friend, but all the while he wants to do you mischief. He wants to get you off the walls, to get you on your own, and to try to make you stop the work of God. Oh, Satan, he's very, very mischievous. Very mischievous indeed. And so again I say to you, be wary of Satan coming and, as it were, trying to trick you to come to Yono, to go away on your own, to be on your own, because his thoughts are only thoughts of evil. His thoughts are thoughts of evil when he wants to try and get you on your own. The psalmist said in Psalm 142, verse 3, he said, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. In the way wherein I walked, they have privily laid a snare for me. David spoke of the enemy, and he stated the way wherein he was walking, his normal course of life, his normal walk, what did the enemy do? They had privily or secretly laid a snare for me. The word snare here in the Hebrew, it refers to a trap that was used for birds. And David here, he spoke of the enemy of secretly setting a trap on his path. And in life, whilst you'll face snags, you'll also face snares. You'll face the traps, the snares of the devil. Yes, at times the devil will combat, the devil will contest, but there are other times when the devil will just simply converse. He'll just try and talk to you, try and speak peaceably to you, try and as it were, get you to be his friend. All the while he's thinking to do you mischief. Don't be trapped. Don't be fooled. Because when the enemy appears friendly, then you should be very, very on alert indeed. The reception of the invitation. But notice secondly here, the refusal of the invitation. The refusal of the invitation. When Nehemiah was working on the walls, he received this seemingly harmless invitation. But he refused it. He said no. He didn't want to go to Yono. Notice here in this refusal, notice his discernment. Discernment. Verse 2, we read, they thought to do me mischief. Nehemiah just received an invite by Sanballat and Geshem to go for a conference 25 miles from Jerusalem. Immediately, however, he realized something was just not quite right. This phrase here, they thought to do me mischief. He wouldn't have said it openly to Sanballat or Geshem, but he obviously thought them. He thought to himself, I wonder why they want me to come down off the walls. I wonder why they suddenly want to talk. Why they suddenly want to be my friend. It was just a few weeks ago that they were slandering me, that they were opposing me. And so he says within himself, with tremendous discernment, they thought to do me mischief. You see, Nehemiah had that quality that all Christians should possess and desire in some capacity. The quality of discernment. Nehemiah was able to read between the lines. He was able to, as it were, dig deeper beyond the words that they were saying. And so he came to this discerning conclusion that they thought to do me mischief. And in Christ's service, whilst you need to be employed, you also need to be discerned. You need to have a discerning spirit. Nehemiah here, He said, oh no, to oh no. Why did he do it? Because he had that discerning spirit. He couldn't maybe quite put his finger on it, but he knew that something was wrong. He thought to himself, why on earth are these people coming to me and asking me to get down off the wall and go for a conference? He had that discerning attitude. And I say to you this morning that as a Christian, you need to have that discerning spirit. You need to have that spirit that at times read between the lines, that spirit that is able to read men, to know men, to discern men, to really get underneath what they're saying. One of the greatest examples of discernment in the Bible, I believe, is displayed in the Lord Jesus Christ. In John chapter 2, we read in verses 24 and 25, Jesus was before men here in the temple. He had just, as it were, tossed the chairs and he had tossed the tables. He didn't like what they were doing. And we read in these verses 24 and 25, that Jesus did not commit himself unto them, for he knew what was in man. That's a tremendous statement. He knew what was in man. He realized that he wasn't going to commit himself to these individuals. Why? Because they had false intentions. They had false motives. He knew they were thinking, they were plotting. And so here he said that he didn't commit himself to them because he knew exactly what they were thinking. And in the work of the kingdom, whilst you need to work with people, you also need to work out people. You need to be able to discern that which is evil and that which is good. Working in the work of God, the rebuilding project, yes, it does involve working with people. We all need to work together. We all are individuals, yes, but we all need to work with each other. But there are times we need to discern when the enemy is coming and seeking to ensnare, entrap, and entice. There are times when you need to be discerning. You need to discern the devil's devices. We need at times to discern what the devil is doing. There is a little Danish proverb that says, the wise man knows everything, but the shrewd man knows everyone. And here we find Nehemiah. He's not only a wise man, but he's a shrewd man. He knows exactly what they're thinking. Exactly what they're thinking. They thought to do me mischief. Beware, child of God. Because the enemy, they have those thoughts that they want to do you mischief. His discernment. But also he refused this invitation because here, notice also his dedication. His dedication. Verse 3, we read, I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Nehemiah, he knew the desires of these men. But interestingly, he doesn't actually state it. He doesn't tell them that one of the reasons that he isn't going to come with them is because he knows they're thinking to do him mischief. The reason that he gives them for not coming with them is because of the work of God. You see, he realized that he was needed. And he realized that if he came down off the walls, then the work would cease if he left it. And so whenever he was tempted by the enemy, tempted to leave the walls, he stated that the work of God was his priority, that he couldn't leave the work of God, that he couldn't lower his standard in the work of God, and so that he wouldn't come down with them to Ono. And whenever we're confronted by deception and the prospect of desertion, the best response is occupation. It is to continue in the work of God. There are times when the enemy will deceive you. Times when the enemy will come to you and ask you, as it were, to get down off the walls. Ask you to stop in the rebuilding project that you are involved in, as it were. He will come to you and say, come down, meet together. But your response is to be like Nehemiah. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. O child of God, this morning, do you love the work of God? Can you say like Nehemiah, I'm doing a great work and I won't lower my standard, I won't lower my stance. Oh, I'm doing a great work, and I won't bow to the enemy. Oh, have you that attitude of persistence? Persistence. Despite the attack of the enemy, the deception of the enemy, have you that spirit of persistence? That spirit that says within you, I can't come down. I can't come down. I'm needed on the walls, and I cannot come down. This attitude of continuing to work, it was always a constant note in the hymn book of Nehemiah. You remember in chapter 2 when he first landed in Jerusalem and the enemy came to him just at first to try and suss him out. His response was in chapter 2 verse 20, let us arise and build. Then in chapter 4, when they came again and they came again, what was Nehemiah's response? Well, chapter 4 verse 6, so built we the wall, for the people had a mind to work. You see, he was always facing the attack of the enemy by saying, I'm too busy. I'm too busy to get involved. I have a great work to do. Now let me do it. And when the enemy entices, it is best to stay industrious. It's best to stay on course in the work of God. You asked me this morning, preacher, what's the best way to deal with deception? To deal with the tricks, the traps, the snares that the enemy sets me, I say this to you. Keep on in the work of God. Even double your efforts, as it were. Continue to work. Give all you can to the work of God. Let it be said of you that it was said of the people that they had a mind to work. Realize that if you come down from the wall, then you're more susceptible to the attack of the enemy. This is what Nehemiah did. He said, I'm doing a great work. I'm doing a great, great work. And I can't come down. Oh, have you that spirit this morning? That love for the work of God that says it's a great work. It's a tremendous work. A privilege to serve Jesus Christ. And I'm not going to come down. Satan, you can try and trick me. You can try and trap me. You can try and entice me. Satan, no matter what you throw at me, I'm not going to come down. I'm not going to get down off the ladder, as it were. I'm not going to come down. Nehemiah did this. He refused the invitation. The reception, the refusal. Notice lastly and quickly here, it's the repetition of the invitation. The enemy, they didn't give up. Verse 4 of chapter 6, we read, yet they sent unto me 4 times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. The enemy were very determined. Sanballat and Geshem, they came again, and they came again. They realized this was probably their last opportunity. Their last opportunity to stop Nehemiah. They saw the walls being completed. They saw the workers hanging the doors and the gates. They realized the time was fast running out for them. And so they came at Nehemiah 4 times. And just as they came at Nehemiah 4 times, so we read his response was exactly the same. He said, I answered them after the same manner. Just picture the scene. He said, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Then they came again. And again he said, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. And this happened 4 times over. And no matter how many times he was asked to come down, asked to lower the standard, Nehemiah refused the invitation each time. And when the enemy is persistent, you should also be persistent. Match the enemy's persistence with your own personal persistence. Oh, I trust that you see now in these studies, the enemy's not going to give up. Satan will not give up. He will come again and again and again. He will try attack after attack, plan after plan, scheme after scheme. And like Nehemiah, you need to be able to say no to him whenever he comes. Should it be 4 times? Should it be 5 times? You're going to look next week, even in the next verse, where they come a 5th time, again with a different ploy. And should they come, should they attack, your answer should be like Nehemiah, I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Like Jesus Christ, whenever the devil came to him in the wilderness, tried to tempt him, he had an answer for the devil each time. Oh, child of God, the Lord's teaching you here that we need to have that fortitude. We need to have that strength. Whenever the enemy comes, no matter how many times he comes, we need to be able to answer the enemy each time he comes. An invitation filled with deception. I trust the Lord will bless his word to your own heart and life this morning.